Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the So Long Vikram Lander Show. This is kind of was more visceral than I thought it would. India sent their Chandrayaan 2 spacecraft to the moon, and they deployed the Vikram lander, and they lost communication with it right after it deployed. This is a sad day. They showed the Indian Prime Minister was consoling the employees. They had lost their lunar lander. They were about to become the fourth nation behind the U.S., the former Soviet Union, and China to land on the moon. And they were unsuccessful. The sad thing was the Chandrayaan 2, the lunar orbiter, flew back over, and there was the heat signal. There was the Vikram lander on the surface of the moon, but they couldn't talk to it. They couldn't communicate with it. Apparently, it had what they called a rough landing. And, you know, I think the thing is, Rick,
we've all had that, Tony.
Yeah, we've had a rough landing. The other thing is, I have been the parent of a teenage boy. And so, again, you see the remarkable similarities. Created this thing and given it a task, and you see it lying there, and you can't communicate with it, and you don't know, is it going to amount to anything? Is it on drugs? You know, what happened to the thing that you created? And that's exactly.
And really, parent, let's be honest, you're just hoping it'll yell at you.
Right.
You're just hoping.
You're looking to see if you can communicate. And I thought, wow, you know, I mean, it just hit me. It's just like, that's exactly the way I felt when I saw my son on the couch. You know, it's just, oh, I can only communicate with it.
Do you honestly think that lunar lander's down there playing with its Xbox?
No, not at all.
Has no interest in you whatsoever?
No, the sad thing is, it's apparently they've got solar panels, they've got 14 days, and after 14 days, the thing freezes up anyway. It was a 14-day mission.
So, by the time the show airs, they're really cutting it close.
It's gone. And I don't think they have any hopes. They've tried several different methods of pinging the lunar lander and got nothing. So it looks like Vikram is gone. It is dead. It is down, barring a miracle. And like I said, I thought about it, and I said, this is very familiar as a parent of a teenage boy. I understand why these people at the India's space agency are crying and consolable.
Well, I mean, you know, all jokes aside, I mean, they're probably spending, their ton of their life. They probably gave literally blood, sweat, and tears to the project to try to get it off the ground. They wanted to, you know, they're probably very brilliant people. As we weren't always successful in all of our endeavors and, you know, discovery, you feel bad for them a little bit, but you're right. At the same token, I mean, it makes for good radio.
It does. $140 million mission, which is, I think,
we'll see if they'd added a zero to that, they might have had a shot.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we in the U.S., we couldn't do anything for less than $1 billion, right?
Yeah. Well, they've sent two lunar orbiters, Chandrayaan 1 and 2, but just could not get the lander down.
Well, they should rename it then, the Crasher, not the Lander.
We're going to start an international incident. Yeah, I mean, you know.
If they're listening, oh, my gosh, I'll be so happy.
Yeah, that's right. So salute to all our friends in India. We are sorry for your loss, and hopefully better luck next time. Speaking of that, I'm going to keep that theme going because there were a couple of things that came out of interest for parents.
Any chance that you could maybe tell who I am and maybe we could talk about the website? Just out of curiosity.
I got excited. So let's go back and let's restart the show then. Thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio. Special radio wave to those hardworking folks who, as far as I know, have yet to crash a space vehicle at the MSU Ronald G.
Speaking of crashes.
Space Science Center. Our co-medical host, Shelley Irving, she is, in fact...
Is she still part of the show?
She is still part of the show, at least this week. She has taken a... we'll call it a parental leave.
Can we
of
say
absence.
Siesta?
No, because we're going to talk about parental leave, and I think the...
So she's looking for her lunar lander.
Yeah, she is trying to establish communication.
Over in Isonville, huh?
You bet. But holding up admirably under the stress of covering for her from the University of Kentucky, Executive Director of Networking and Infrastructure, Rick Phillips will explain to you how to access Health Matters on the Internet.
And you forgot to say who's quite adept at crashing, right?
Well, in fact, if things crash, I used to call you.
I mean, we've been talking on the show for years about guys crash things intentional to get women's attention. I mean, yeah. That's just what we do.
Yeah, it doesn't work that way with lunar landers.
Yeah, but I bet you those Indian guys got women. They're coming after them by the droves now.
I am not going there.
Well, if you want to get the audio of the show, you're going to have to go to WMKY.org. That's where you'll find all of the recordings of the most recent shows. There's also a list of the shows with a summary for each of them so that you can get the right show. Or, shoot, just try to listen to all of them. It'd be great. After that, you want to interact with the show, go to Facebook.com/HM Radio Show. There you'll find a fan page devoted to health matters. It's your chance to leave us some feedback, some show topics, talk about things that we talked about on air or possibly things that are going on in the real world at the real time. It is, you know, being sometimes with the show being delayed a few days. We have a 10-day time from recording to airing. So maybe you want to talk about something before that. So certainly your way to interact with Health Matters is through our fan page at Facebook.com/HM Radio Show.
Our sponsor for today's show, the Vaccination League, reminding you, don't be late, vaccinate. Vaccination is the all-natural way to take care of those nasty viral and bacterial illnesses without resorting to artificial antibiotics and vitamins and other potent chemicals that you put on your body. That's right. Vaccination is like Mother Nature with a 23-gauge needle. Now, we're talking today about influenza vaccine. It is almost time to get your flu shot. In fact, we at Health Matters recommend the flu shot in October. It is available in most area pharmacies in September, but we use it and we usually recommend for October. The reason is, I mean, the influenza season is long, and I think it's getting longer. I believe the last case of influenza I am aware of, it was diagnosed in the clinics at St. Clair last spring, was in April. And we have already, I have it on good authority, that by the second week of September, we are already diagnosing influenza as well in the clinics. So the question is then, what is a person to do? How do you, in fact, address the fact that the influenza season has expanded so much? Still, the peak months for influenza are going to be January, February. So we recommend that you get your influenza vaccine in October. September, in my mind, just a little bit early, especially since we had a delayed season last year. It takes about 2 weeks for your body to develop antibodies. That is, the influenza vaccine contains either a killed virus or, in the case of the nose spray, it has a cold virus that once it gets warm, it dies anyway. So you will not get any live virus. However, your body can use that killed virus to make antibodies that will attack a live virus if it ever sees one. So really, it's just boosting your own immune system in a natural way, showing it a mugshot, if you will, of the virus so that your body will be prepared if it should see influenza. Takes a couple of weeks for the body to rev up and produce the antibodies necessary to kill influenza virus. So I tell my patients, at all costs, try to get the influenza vaccine at least a couple of weeks before Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving, the parents, the kids get together, they swap germs, and the influenza season takes off. But there will be cases in the fall. There are cases now. If you wanted to go ahead and get it in September, many experts feel like you should just get it whenever you can. Other people say wait for October.
So Tony, when exactly, remind us and me and everyone, how long before the flu season starts do the masterminds of the vaccination start putting together the multiple strains that they're going to try to vaccinate for?
It's really a problem because they're still growing it in eggs. There are some now that are made by recombinant techniques, but it takes too long to change. The advisory committee that puts together this vaccine, they made a last-minute change, and so some of the flu vaccine manufacturers got a late start. We won't have full capacity at the start of the flu season.
But what I'm saying, but if I get it right now, what's the odds are that, I mean, is it better? I mean, because to not get it right now, I would have had to have taken the vaccination 2 weeks ago, right?
Yeah.
And 2 weeks ago, did they have the most up-to-date?
Yeah. Once they decide for the flu season, you know, again, it takes so long to manufacture it that once they decide, they lock that one in. So it's that's your final answer locked in, and that's going to be good. They have changed it sometimes midway through the flu season, but it takes a lot because they have to ramp up production. If right now, if they decided to make a change, that change would not be effective until in March. It takes about 6 months to go through that production cycle.
Wow.
So really frustrating. It's a very slow system and not very nimble if the predominant type of influenza changes. Now, they're looking at information from the Southern Hemisphere. They're trying to figure out what might spread to the U.S. this year, and that's how they create their vaccines. Quadrivalent or trivalent, according to the CDC, it doesn't matter, but the pediatricians want all of the pediatric vaccines to be quadrivalent. That means they protect against four different strains of the flu instead of just three. There is the flu mist is back. This for people, I think it's age 2 to 50, a nose spray, especially if you're afraid of needles. You have a good immune system, you're not pregnant, and you're not around a person who has a weak immune system. You can get the nasal spray instead of the flu vaccine. Old guys like me, we are either going to get the regular flu shot, or they do have a kind of an extra virus for senior citizens, because our immune systems don't work quite as well as you younger whippersnappers. So that is our sponsor, the Vaccination League, reminding you it is time to start thinking about flu vaccine. We do recommend it in October, but it is available now, and some experts recommend you go ahead and get it. Now, we talked a little bit then about how, before Rick stopped me and said, look, you're doing a radio show. You've got to stop just...
Got to remember that.
Yeah, I need to remember that I am on the radio and I can't just talk about whatever I want to
talk about.
Well,
it's kind of appropriate, though, because we were talking about crashes.
Yeah, and so I crashed the show just as they crashed the Vikram lander. And
luckily for us, we didn't lose communication. You still had a beacon to help you find your way back.
Rick was there. I could see his heat signal. But I was able to establish communication before he went dark. Although you did go rather dark on me there for a while.
Pretty true, true.
Anyway, we're back. Anyway, but I got enough time here. Well, a couple other things about parenting just want to let you know. First of all, this was August 18th, a new study out. We're trying to figure out what's the difference between parents and people who don't have kids. What does that do to you or for you? That's the big question. Now, most of the time, we'll look at people who have children and people who don't have children, and we'll say, well, who's the happiest? Turns out the people who don't have children are the happiest in most surveys. But if you wait till after the kids leave, then the parents become happier. Christoph Becker, Heidelberg University in Germany, they did a European survey, 55,000 people ages 50 or older, about their emotional well-being. And they found that after age 50, people with children had a greater life satisfaction and fewer symptoms of depression, but only if the kids left home.
Makes sense to me.
You've got to get the kids out of the house.
Makes perfect sense.
That life satisfaction just does not come your way. They figure, well, the kids, after they move out, their additional social outlets, they're kind of looking back on the parents. There's somebody who really cares about you. You have more security for your older age. A lot of things like that. I think also, if you've been busy parenting kids, all of a sudden you rediscover there's a world there. You have a spouse. There are things to be done. There are things to be seen. And it's an exciting time after the kids leave and you have a little bit more money than you did. I think there's a lot of things that go into this, but at any rate, it appears in Europe that is so. Nicholas Wolfinger at the University of Utah did pretty much the same thing. He analyzed 40 years of data from the U.S. surveys and found the same thing. We're going to let you mull on that for a moment, figure out how to get your kids out of the house, and we will be back with our second fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Moorhead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the So Long Vikram Lander Show. We are sharing the sadness, overwhelmed.
From our crash to your crash.
The India Space Agency, due to the failure of the Vikram lander deployed from the Chandrayaan 2 lunar orbiter, it apparently crashed and stopped communicating. And as a parent, I know how that feels, and it feels pretty darn bad. Our sponsor for the second time, the Vaccination League, reminding you, don't be late, vaccinate. Vaccination is the all-natural way to take care of things like influenza, things like shingles, things like measles, which we'll talk a little bit more about in a moment, and other viral and bacterial illnesses, hepatitis A being one of them. It boosts your immune system naturally. It just shows it the virus that we want you to be able to defend yourself against, and then it lets your body do the rest. What a natural thing to have happen to you. It is, in fact, like Mother Nature with a 23-gauge needle. That is our sponsor, the Vaccination League. It is time for your fall flu shot, or almost time. A lot of the experts say, look, get it early, get it early, get it early. As soon as they become available, and they did become available in September, we have them at St. Clair, the area pharmacies have them, most hospitals, most health departments, you can get this almost anywhere. There are a number of varieties. There is a flu shot with an immune system booster. I've not been using that myself, but it looks like that is a pretty good idea. There is a senior citizen flu shot that has a little bit of extra flu virus in it because us senior citizens are slow starters and our immune systems take a while to rev up. There is the nasal spray for people ages 2 to 49 who have intact immune systems, not pregnant and not around other people who might catch the flu. It turns out that way you can avoid a needle, and it seems to be satisfactory. The pediatricians are okay with that. There are quadrivalent, which have protect against four strains of flu. There are trivalent, which protect against three strains of flu. The CDC says, get the shot, get the shot, get the shot. Whatever it is, we want you to get it. They do not differentiate. And there is no difference in outcomes between the four strain and the three strain. It makes sense. Yeah, if you could get the four strain, sure, do it. That's called quadrivalent. But there is no proof that that is a better vaccine than the trivalent. So that is our sponsor, the Vaccination League. Remember, it is time to start thinking about that flu shot. Now, we did this on the teaser before the show started. This was September 4th, and I picked this up, whether several outlets, USA Today, Healthline. I think I got mine off, New York Times did it, and I got mine off of a place called New Scientist. There was a drug labeling mix-up. 17 children in Spain diagnosed with hypertrichosis, which is basically excess hair growth. And they also call it, just to titillate, just to get you in the news, werewolf syndrome.
Do they really call it that?
No. That's the thing. The doctor walks in and says, you know, your darling little child that you love, the little infant there you're holding in your arms, he has werewolf syndrome, and he's going to scare the other children. You know, I mean, who's going to say that?
I mean, you know, put some positive on it. Say, you know, someday your son is going to win a hairy man contest. I mean, he's going to win.
Well, all right, what happened? This is horrific when you step back and look at it. They had this drug omeprazole. That's Prilosec. That's the acid-blocking medicine. And sometimes kids have excess stomach acid, and they have heartburn symptoms, or they regurgitate their food. And so they put them on this Prilosec, which is used for infants and small children. Well, instead of giving them the Prilosec, they packaged Rogaine, minoxidil, in the pills, labeled them omeprazole, and they gave them to the parents of these kids that had excess stomach acid. They were taking minoxidil by mouth. Now, a real quick history, minoxidil started as a blood pressure medicine and a very powerful blood pressure medicine. Had a lot of side effects. It would drop your blood pressure. It made you retain fluid. And so it wasn't a real easy to tolerate blood pressure medicine, but we used it all the time, especially in people who had kidney failure, where we had to really get a powerful medicine. One of the side effects of minoxidil, the blood pressure medicine, was hair growth. And I'm not talking about, you know, just a shade of hair growth. I'm talking about women got beards on this drug.
Wow.
So what we did then is we took that and made a lotion out of it called Rogaine, and you rub it on your skin. You don't have to take Rogaine by mouth because it will drop your blood pressure. I think the amazing thing with this was none of these infants and small children apparently had a precipitous drop in their blood pressure, which could have put them in the hospital. So hair growth is unusual, and it's unnerving to parents. It's just like space crashes. It's funny to us because everything's funny to us.
Well,
at
sure.
Health Matters, because we're eighth graders at heart.
Eighth grade men, nonetheless.
Yeah, but this could have turned out much worse than it did. Spanish Dermatology Association estimates the excess hair should fall out after about 3 months. So no family photos in the next 3 months. Halloween's coming up. Everything's working well for these kids. Meanwhile, Spain-based drug maker, and it's a pharma Quimica Sur, and I'm sure I just completely butchered that pronunciation, but at any rate, they mislabeled the minoxidil as omeprazole. They are not talking to the public right now. They're meeting with their lawyers. So you think you had a bad day. They gave a potent blood pressure and hair growth drug to infants. Babies started growing excessive hair on their foreheads and basically became werewolves.
Yeah.
That's a bad day. That is start to finish. That is a bad day. Have you ever had that, like a big mistake, and you go back and you look and you say, no, I didn't do that. No. Let's look at it one more time. Let me look at it again. I did not do that. I've had that kind of day. Not with patients, fortunately. I mean.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. As you know, you and I both have, while yours is quite a bit larger than mine, we both have small farms, right? Every small farmer that doesn't do it professionally. Well, I suspect the ones that do it for a living too,
yeah,
have had those kinds of days. I mean, I've done stupid things on and went back the next day and went, what was I thinking? Yeah. And usually it requires turning the tractor back over.
Yeah, and well, yeah. So I've gotten my tractor out of my pond four times now, and over in my career, what I remember is the stuff that I do. Usually, it involves something running berserk while I'm just watching, thinking, "Well, that's not going to turn out well." I mean, as far as going back and say, "What did I do?" I don't remember a farm thing where I'm trying to figure out what it, I know darn well what I did. It was just I did it stupid.
Well, I mean, I can't tell you. Every time I go to mow, I'm faced with the dilemma of do I take the front loader off or do I not?
Mm-hmm.
And if I take the front loader off, there's about a 100% chance I won't hurt anything. If I leave the front loader on, there's about a 100% chance I'm going to tear something up, like knock a barn door off. Or, you know, because when you're trying to mow, you're trying to get in tight places. And next thing you know, I'll knock a telephone pole down that's got electricity on it. Or, you know, gosh forbid. I mean, tractors are very powerful things. You have to be very careful. And so, but yeah, we've all done this stupid stuff. But you're right. You obviously don't want that to happen in your clinical practice. I know when I was a clinical engineer, biomedical engineer, whatever you want to call them, worked on medical devices, you absolutely wanted to, you know, measure twice, cut once kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, you wanted to remove any kind of you wanted to add error correction to your work. But this is both funny and tragic.
Yeah, and I, again, apparently, even though this is a very powerful blood pressure medicine, none of these kids had a drop in blood pressure. But they did grow hair, and apparently lots of hair on these wonderful tiny children.
I mean, they're going to grow up and they're going to look like Fabio, right? I mean, they're going to have hair down to their
waist. 3 months from now, it falls out. You know, again, assuming they stop the medicine, hopefully the parents are not going to keep them on the Rogaine. And they stop the medicine, it'll be fine. We're going to stay in Europe for our next story. This was August 29th. Several outlets on this one. I picked it up, I think, from Time magazine. Four European nations, Albania, the Czech Republic, Greece, and the United Kingdom, have lost their measles elimination status, according to the European Regional Verification Commission for Measles and Rubella. Now, what that means is, in order to have measles elimination, you can have cases of measles, but they're brought in from the outside. You eliminate transmission within your country, and any measles you get comes from somewhere else. And it's there's actually a definition. I got it right here. Everybody's wondering, well, how do you define measles elimination? A country is considered to have eliminated measles if no single strain of the virus has circulated for 12 months or more. There is high vaccine coverage and good measles identification systems in place. So these four nations, Albania, Czech Republic, Greece, and very recently, again, in August of 2019, the United Kingdom, which was certified measles-free, is no longer measles-free. The director of the World Health Organization Department of Immunization says, well, they're experiencing an increase in measles. As a matter of fact, all regions in the world are experiencing an increase except for the Americas in general. Now, the Americas, actually, North America, South America, were certified measles-free in 2016 after a 22-year vaccination drive across basically across Central and South America. We managed to get vaccine free. What is worrisome is we are, in fact, about to lose our measles free status. New York City, among the Orthodox Jews and other populations that don't get vaccines, there has been an ongoing measles outbreak. If that lasts through October, then we will lose our measles free status as well. So you see, we had measles conquered. We had it.
Right.
And we are letting it slip. It is astonishing to me.
I don't know. The whole thing makes sense. This is happening across the board on several things. I just don't understand it.
Yeah. There are a number of vaccine-preventable diseases that we still have epidemics of. That is, all we got to do is vaccinate a sizable percentage of our population. These things don't happen. Measles. Now what happens with polio? You know, frankly, you know, we had that licked. Are we going to see a resurgence of polio, which is a horrific disease that affects kids? Whooping cough. We've already seen outbreaks of that. There are growing numbers of people, travelers and parents. Parents choose not to vaccinate. Really, I will just tell you, there was in the journal Nature Medicine, June 21st. I've been hanging on to this, and I think this is the time to talk about it. They're talking about rethinking herd immunity. And, you know, there are some places in the world that are so poor and so mistrustful of government that you simply can't vaccinate. There are several places in Africa that are that way. Actually, in Pakistan, they've had some problems because people posed as vaccinators to find Osama bin Laden. And they have not forgotten that. Now, if somebody says, I'm a vaccinator, they'll kill them because they don't trust them. So there are places that are either very suspicious or very impoverished, and we cannot get vaccine in. What's interesting is in the United Kingdom and the United States, there are places that are quite wealthy, and they say, look, this is not our problem. We will let the other people get vaccinated, and they will take care of our children. We don't have to put our children through the risk, the side effects, and the discomfort of getting shots. We'll just let the other kids do that. I remember there's a joke when I was growing up. Our little Claude is very sensitive. Just slap the kid next to him, and that will frighten Claude, and he will do what you ask. And I think the same way, you know, vaccinate the kid next to mine, and that way my kid will get the benefits. So we have then, and we've got to build this into our system, our understanding of the system. We used to think, well, if you have enough money to get vaccinated, you're fine. The truth of the matter is, though, the very success of these vaccines, well, I've never seen polio. I'm not even sure it exists. That was a historical oddity, along with the plague, you know, or these other things. And so, you know, I don't have to worry about polio. The thing about measles that's interesting is it is so contagious that it's moving at a very fast rate. But the other things, what if we start getting lockjaw again because we're not getting our tetanus vaccinations? You know, I mean,
There's some political things that might not be so bad.
Yeah, Vaccination League, it was pretty simple. I appreciate where you're going with that, Rick.
I mean, as we get closer to election years, that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Vaccine may be overrated. You know, we've had everything from Russian Twitter bots doing anti-vaccine to obviously social media, some celebrities and some misinformation out there. And, you know, when I started the Vaccination League sponsor, it was pretty simple. We will tell people about new vaccines and they will get them. Shingrix, a wonderful vaccine against shingles, twice as effective as the old Zostavax we used to use. If you have had the old shingles vaccine, you should get the new one. If you haven't, you should get the new one. Everyone over age 50 should get the new one because shingles is such a horrific thing that affects one-third of American population.
Everybody I've ever talked to that's had them said it was miserable.
It's absolutely miserable. We've got a more effective vaccine than ever before, but we're not using it. So I always thought we just get the word out and people would know about vaccination. But it turns out, you know, the word's out about measles vaccine.
Yeah. I don't. Who would not know about that?
Yeah.
And so, isn't it more that people have just chosen because of some of the stigmas just not to use it?
Right. And so, but we have to factor that in. We have to find a way to keep the children from dying, rich, poor, and in between, because, again, your choice for your child is going to affect my child's risk of catching these diseases. These vaccines are good. They're not 100% good, though. I cannot overcome your bad decision by vaccinating my child. We really have to, we're in this together. And we have to develop an understanding and a method of getting these vaccines out. That is a long, long diatribe, but the Vaccination League's our sponsor. They will appreciate me basically railing against anti-vaccine movements.
Well, I mean, and since when on this show have we ever really, you know, not coveted filler material?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if something important
let's be honest,
comes along,
you know,
we would talk about
let's
it.
Let's be honest.
In the meantime, we'll talk about
we're
this.
We're always down with some filler.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think, you know, it looks like right now there's a pretty sizable chance we will lose our measles-free status. That is, measles will be, once again, we call it endemic. Measles will be spread from person to person in the United States rather than an outsider coming in and into a population and getting it started. It was an international traveler problem, but now if this place in New York City, if they cannot get it cleared up by October and it continues to be transmitted, then we, in fact, are growing our own measles now.
Yeah, I don't know. This is just a tough topic all around. I mean, we grew up in an era where you just got vaccinated. You didn't really even question it. Now so many people question it, and I'm just not from that era.
Well,
I'm midlife.
Vaccination League reminds you, it's flu shot time, but it's also, please get your children vaccinated. This is a wonderful thing that you can do for them. We are also, for my patients, I'm recommending hepatitis A vaccine. It doesn't look like we're going to be able to get that cleared up because there are some populations. It used to be there would be a person who got hepatitis A and spread it. And if you knew where that person was, you weren't environmentally linked to that person, you were fine. It is also, this has been a very, very difficult. Kentucky's had a prolonged, in some cases lethal, outbreak of hepatitis A. So we're trying to vaccinate as well. There are so many things you can do with vaccines, but not unless you actually get them. I got a couple things here, Rick.
Yeah.
That I want to talk about. We'll start on the first one and see where we go. Okay. F. Perry Wilson, who's a physician, was reviewing this article in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, and I found this August 28th. These researchers from Boston, They were looking at whether higher levels of optimism, the feeling that somehow things will be okay, that might be linked to longer life expectancy. So they use these cohort studies. Now, cohort studies, you know, are people that basically you find somebody who has a thing, and then you find other people who don't have that thing, but they otherwise they look very, very much alike. The Nurses' Health Study, they've been following people for 10 years, 70,000 women. Veterans Affairs Normative Aging Study, 30 years follow-up, 1,400 men. At baseline, they asked the participants how strongly they agree with statements like, in uncertain times, I usually expect the best. And overall, I expect more good things to happen to me than bad things. Where would you sit on that, Rick?
Agree or disagree?
Yeah.
Agree.
Agree. I struggle with
optimism. I'm the guy who believes you can go out and you can make, to some extent, you can make a little bit of your luck, right? So, I mean, you know, I think our parents taught us that, you know, you can sometimes roll your sleeves up. And I get there are certain situations sometimes it's just hard to get out of. But for the most part, if you live a life of hard work and trying to commit to being a good human, yeah, I agree. I think I generally agree with that you can make it better.
Women in the top 25, they made an optimism score, you know, based on your answer to that question. Women in the top 25% of the optimism scores lived 15% longer than those in the lowest.
Yeah.
Now, was that because, and there's so many things, we'll talk about this, we're going to have to bleed this over to the next fractional portion, but at any rate, in the men, top 20%, they lived 11% longer than men in the bottom 20%.
So I did forget to ask one very important question before we get off here for the break, is when I'm answering that question, have I had my daily cup of coffee yet? Because that really severely could impact that.
Yeah, and who knows? I mean, that's called a confounding variable, and there are so many of them that could make this
study. We are a confounding show.
Yeah, we are a confounding show. We're going to talk more about this and other things in our third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Moorhead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Moorhead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Crash Weaver. We are wishing a fond farewell to the Vikram lander deployed
literally a farewell to it.
Yes, deployed by the Chandrayaan 2 lunar orbiter from the space agency in India. They were attempting to become the fourth country to land on the moon, and unfortunately, it crash landed.
They did land on the moon, technically. Technically speaking, they are part of that four group because they saw it.
Yeah, yeah, they have
they
photos it. Of it lying on the
moon. It landed.
Bits and pieces of it lying on the moon, but it...
Let's be honest. A good landing in an airplane is a controlled crash. They say every landing in an airplane is a crash. Some of them are controlled, and there's a few occasionally that are
uncontrolled. Well, this one, apparently, they came in a little hot. Would that be fair?
I would say they came in just a little hot.
And unfortunately, they lost communication with it. And the sad thing, this is what got me, was the Chandrayaan 2, the orbiter, came back around for another orbit, and it sees the heat signal. It takes, you know, it knows it's down there. Nobody can talk to it. It's just lying there. But they know where it is, and that's got to be
I love the analogy. That's like your teenager.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I know where it is, and it just won't talk to you.
You can't communicate with it. It will not complete its mission, and it's just lying there. And it's just that helpless feeling
and
that
could
all
literally
parents
explode
know.
At any minute.
I'm telling you, it's a teenage boy.
I would say teenager in general, but I get what you mean. I didn't have teenage
Rick
boys.
Yeah, Rick had two girls, but he gets the general picture. I will tell you. I just think that's just – I had girls and boys, and I'll tell you, my son, this is my son right here. He is, in fact, a lunar lander.
But weren't your girls more emotionally – didn't they go from emotional upswing to downswings faster than the boys?
I mean, being the parent of a teenage girl means you don't know what mental illness you're going to have today.
Right.
It's imposed on you from the
they
outside.
They are bipolar by design.
Yeah. A son, basically – I remember my wife, it was like, you know, this is like a hand grenade. You're sitting there, and she pulls the pin. She goes up and tries to ask him some questions.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, you try to get as close to the grenade as possible without having it explode on you.
I know. And I'm just thinking, don't pull that pin. And she said, so how you doing? You know, she wants to know, are you going to be home tonight and stuff like that? I mean, it's essential questions, but I'm just, please, just don't pull that pin. But we digress.
As usual.
Yeah. If you've had teenage kids, you know what I'm talking about.
And to my teenage kids, or the kids that were once teenagers that might be listening that are close to me, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Sure we are.
Yeah. Right.
All right. Back to the article. I want to go pick up where we left off. This, I'll remind you again, 70,000 women follow 10 years nurses' health study, 1,400 men, not as many men, but 30 years follow-up, Veterans Affairs normative aging study. Ask them two questions. In uncertain times, I usually expect the best. They had to rate how they felt about that question. And also, I expect more good things to happen to me than bad things, and they rate that question, and it generates an optimism score. And those that had the highest optimism scores live 15% longer than those in the lowest, the women did, and the men 11% longer than the ones in the lowest 20% of the optimism score. Now, you can look at this a bunch of ways. First of all, if you have been mugged on the way home every day that week, you're going to have a lower optimism score. So part of this is going to depend upon your socioeconomic status, how safe things are at home, and so forth, because overall good things are going to happen to me not necessarily a universal – it's not something you can will from the inside if you're living in a place where bad things happen.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, and there are times – I think most every human goes through times in their life where things are up and things are down, you know, right? And it's just – I think it's part of being a human walking the face of the earth. I mean, there's just nobody – lives a life without ups and downs. I mean, just you know.
So it could be. Now, the other thing then, so it could be that the previous experiences generated their optimism. But the other thing that could happen is their optimism then generates health habits. If you think, look, I'm going to have a lot of good things happen to me. I need to be ready to be able to do a trip around the world at age 90, so I better eat my vegetables I'm going to have to exercise. It's going to change your health habits.
I would skew that just a little bit. In a little bit different light, because it's something that both you and I have looked at, is while I don't have any grandchildren, I do believe they're coming. And, you know, I want to be able to spend some great fun and time with them as they get older. And you know, not just when they're little, but I'd really like to extend my life to where I get to see them graduate or get married. And you're right, it drives you to, you know, maybe lose a few pounds, you know, do some exercise.
Yeah,
it just does. And you're right. So is the optimism feeding the health, or is the health feeding the optimism? It's hard to say.
So this guy that wrote this, F. Perry Wilson, is a physician, but he does numbers. And he's got some charts here and so forth. And it's really interesting. One of the things he points out that really got my attention, the increase in life expectancy with optimism is about the same as the decrease in life expectancy with having diabetes or heart disease.
Right.
So, in other words, if pessimism were a disease, pessimism apparently is as bad as these things. And we know that poor mental health is related to greater levels of disability in general than physical health. And you can see how this thing sort of it will snowball. If, in fact, you are pessimistic, then you don't take care of your physical health as much, because why bother? And then your life expectancy plummets. But these are big numbers. If we could figure out how to create this optimism, you know, once again, this is an observational study. We have to be careful. They call them confounders. Is there something we're not thinking about here, such as how many times they've been beaten up in the past 3 weeks, or as you said, maybe they have children, maybe they don't. What's going on there? Optimism associated with extreme longevity, defined as living to greater than age 85. Women in the top quartile were about 50% more likely to make it past age 85 than the least optimistic women. And men who were optimistic were actually 70% more likely to hit age 85. You know, and so here's me. If you're optimistic, you're likely to hit age 85. And I guess, well, that lets me out. And see, there it is. You see it? You saw it right there. The pessimism creeping in.
Technically, they just heard it.
Yeah. All right. Give you that.
Does that inflate the air falling,
leaving the balloon?
Did that inflate you or deflate you when I said that?
That deflated me. I'm just thinking, I'm not going to make it to age 85. I'm so pessimistic.
Sure you are. You're going to make it to 85.
Now, when they adjusted for health behaviors like smoking and eating high-quality diet, dropped the differences a little bit. But again, F. Perry Wilson, who looks at the numbers, he says, now, wait a second, though. How can you do that adjustment? It may be that the smoking and the diet, in fact, is a part of the optimism. So optimism in its penumbra, as a package, it may be associated with better health habits. We don't know that. We suspect that. If you have something to live for, then you want to live longer. Optimists, they said, believe that going to gym will work for them, so they go to the gym. It turns out that 25% of optimism is actually inheritable. It comes, it's genetic. It's come
really?
From your family.
You genetic? You actually are born with it, or you're just hanging around it and you develop those traits?
Well, it runs in family. I don't think there's an optimism gene, or at least not one been identified yet.
That's kind of what I was saying. Yeah. So they're not technically born with it. They're just born around a bunch of people who are in a good mood. All the time.
Yeah. I guess so. But you get something from your parents, either a tendency or something genetic. And he just said, based on prior studies, I don't have any references for that, so I don't know about that. There are multiple studies, says F. Perry Wilson, MD, that show you can actually change a person's inherent optimism levels. Now, we have not then done the study that says if you change to optimism, you get the same benefits as the people who are optimism naturally in these 30-year so forth follow-ups. But you can change. Studies have used journaling, meditation, even cognitive behavioral therapy to try to get people to look on the sunny side. And it appears that for whatever reason, people who are optimistic, perhaps people who become optimistic may live longer. So if you have a choice, you know, the glass is always going to be half full because that is the choice that will make you more likely to make it to age 85 and to live longer and perhaps live healthier. It makes sense to me. I've had some patients, you know, that it's a kind of a what's the use? You know, maybe we should treat your cholesterol. Oh, what's the use? Maybe we should get that blood pressure down. Yeah, I've tried and nothing works. And you see that level of pessimism, and that directly affects their future risk of cardiovascular disease, no doubt about it.
I mean, it's on it. All this, Tony, is nothing a good chocolate shake can fix. Right?
Well, no, they said cognitive behavioral, and they said journaling and meditation. But eating makes me more optimistic.
Absolutely.
Yeah, caffeine makes you more optimistic.
I am looking forward to a shake later already.
All right, so you got that.
My life
but
has
you said,
hope.
I have hope after caffeine.
Well, that's true, after caffeine.
Yeah. My
wife. We're terrible.
My wife saw a T-shirt that said, caffeine hit the bench, bourbon, you're up. So, you know, depending on how pessimistic you are, you may have to have a different
It is funny. We are just, we're terrible.
All right, this is the part of the show where I chuck Rick and I go it on my own. Rick,
oh, my gosh. Are you talking about pharmaceuticals?
I'm going to make the women mad. I'm going to go ahead. Let's just go ahead and alienate
our women. Well, no, I might get involved
listeners.
As long as we're not talking about drugs or pharmaceuticals.
No, It's not drugs. This is what they said. This was published. This was from the Journal of the American Heart Association, August 21st. Women are more likely than men to have typical symptoms of heart attack, and their symptoms are actually more predictive when they have them of a heart attack than they are in men. Now, we have always said that women are special. Men, they will have the typical symptoms of a heart attack. And let me remind you, the number one symptom present in over 80% of people who have a heart attack is a pain in the chest. It is, many people don't describe it as a pain. It is more of a pressure. When they're talking about it, they use their fist and put their fist up against their chest, and they say, it's like an elephant sitting on my chest. Now, Weaver's rule, when I teach the medical students, I tell them, look, anything between the neck and navel that you can't explain, you worry about it being a heart attack. Because heart attacks kill people, and gallbladders and pulled ribs and that kind of stuff doesn't. So if we can't figure it out, we immediately default to what is the worst thing this could be. Let's make sure we take care of that and protect them from dying. But the classic symptom of a heart attack is a pressure or a heavy feeling in the chest. Now, men get that. What has been taught traditionally is women have different symptoms. Maybe they have a feeling of tiredness or fatigue, and it may be present for a long time. They may have a pain, but it's not necessarily in the chest. Women are different, right? All right.
Okay, I'll stipulate that.
All right, but this research, I'll tell you what they did to make sure we got this. This was came from, Amy Ferry, a woman herself, a cardiology research nurse at Edinburgh. They did a fairly large study. They had 274 people diagnosed with a heart attack. and they had people reporting 1,900, almost 2,000 adults who came to the emergency room. Those are the ones that they started. Chest pain was the presenting symptom in 91% of men, 92% of women. It was described as dull, heavy, tight, pressure, aching, squeezing, crushing, or gripping.
Is that because of a woman has better vocabulary than men?
I wonder about that. Women had they were actually more likely to use words.
Yeah, I'm sitting here trying to be nice to us guys, but I mean, to some extent, we're just dumb.
You got the man. You say, "What was the pain like?" Bah.
What pain? Yeah. You're here in the ER. Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, you figure it out. All right. But
she made me come.
But keeping going, women with suspected coronary syndrome more likely to report heart palpitations. Their heart was jumping or beating, 11% versus 7% of the men. More likely to report their pain went to their left arm, and that's a pretty classic heart pain, 36% versus 31%. It went to their back or to their neck or jaw, and that, those are all symptoms of a heart attack. And also to report nausea, which always worried me when somebody has pain in their chest and they're nauseated, 33% of women versus 19% of men. Chest pain, the most common presenting symptom for women and men. As I mentioned, women with a heart attack reported pain with more typical nature descriptors than the men. So there's your vocabulary coming in. The pain was classified overall as typical, more commonly in the women. Less typical symptoms, epigastric pain, back pain, pain that was burning, stabbing, indigestion pain, more common in the men, 41% versus the women, 23%. Second major finding, while individual typical pain features had a similar likelihood for predicting it, the cumulative effect of adding up different symptoms was actually more predictive in women than men. Now, here's where I really get upset. We advocate the guidelines and educational material be updated to minimize the risk of underdiagnosis of treatment of women because they have typical symptoms. And I'm going, you single-minded people, I'm going to go back to this. Men were 41% to 23% more likely to report unusual symptoms like back pain or indigestion. What we ought to be asking, and men are more likely to die of a heart attack. It's true. Well, they're equally likely, but men are more likely to die younger.
Right.
And so we now have research that says men have different symptoms than women, but we're still worried maybe we should report it as the women have typical symptoms, and so when you get typical symptoms, you shouldn't overlook that that might be a heart attack in women. I'm saying the men apparently can't use their words, as Rick says, and so they come in with these weird indigestion symptoms or a stabbing back pain, and you've got to be recognize that those men are more likely to have a heart attack with those unusual symptoms than the women. This is the exact opposite of what we thought, and we're still worried about the women.
Really? How do you really feel about this?
Well,
isn't everybody right here? Aren't you right and they're right?
Yeah,
this is just where you're standing and looking at
it. This article did not mention at any point that we got to recognize that the symptoms are atypical in the men. I think, you know, what I'm hearing is...
Can we just say men are atypical?
Yeah, they said, well, it needs more study because this study contradicts the idea that women have unusual symptoms. They seem to have more of the usual symptoms than the men do. I think what it means for me is that anybody, man or woman, typical symptoms or unusual symptoms, anything between the neck and the navel that you can't explain, you really need to think about the heart. I'm back to where I started from.
I mean, and really what we're trying to, I mean, we're not talking, you know, even if we were talking to all the doctors in the region, you know, that would still make up a very small per capita basis of the people we're trying to get to. So the people that are actually listening, what we're really trying to tell you is you should take this stuff serious.
We'll let you argue it out with your book club. But
right?
Meanwhile,
I mean, right?
I'm going to ask the man who put the Adios in Radio Show.
I'm going to give you one last
the
time.
Adios in Radio Show to get us off the air.
Okay, I'm going to let you leave that one hanging right there. That's on you, not me. Somebody gets a heart attack, it's on you, not me.
All right.
Special thanks to our Morehead State Public Radio producer, Shamari Mosley, and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org or visit us on Facebook just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show, and remember,
Health Matters is clinically proven effective. Health Matters is the first FDA-approved over-the-counter product proven to regrow hair. In clinical studies, 9 out of 10 men and more than 80% of women increased their hair count after using Health Matters versus a placebo.
Health Matters is safe to use. Health Matters has few side effects and no known drug interactions with oral medications. You can follow your normal hair care routine, and it's safe to use on color-treated or chemically-treated hair.
Health Matters is affordable. Health Matters helps regrow hair for less than a dollar a day. While surgical or laser hair replacement procedures can cost thousands of dollars, you can save even more when you subscribe.
Health Matters is easy to apply. Health Matters is simple to use and fits easily into your daily routine. Simply massage onto your scalp and then style as usual, Rick. Remember to use as directed every day to maintain hair regrowth. Whatever you do, do not take Health Matters lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for more exciting news from the world of clinical research on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Morehead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.